Hello, folks, and good afternoon. You're listening to Aggie Radio. I'm Jake Grossman, and this is Mindfulness on Air. If you've been tuning in, then you know this is a series of shows about mindfulness and how that is a way of paying attention to the present moment by using meditation, yoga, and breathing techniques. It involves consciously bringing awareness to our thoughts and feelings without making judgments about them. It is a method for observing what is happening right now in our bodies, minds, and the world around us. And so it can be applied to whatever we are doing, bringing our awareness to that, but can actually be a whole path in and of itself, a way of meditation, a way of our ordinary day lives, really employing this to finding more depth to self-discovery, helping with the mind, centeredness or grounding. It's just a way of noticing our relation to the world, not necessarily trying to change it, but notice what's there and how often we may be unaware. And so it could be a wide range, as I've mentioned. You use mindfulness in your everyday life. We may not be aware that we're aware. It can be used as yoga or its own meditation. So it's pretty neat to explore, and I hope you've been enjoying it over these past couple weeks. And if you're new, haven't listened before, well, I just explained what we're really about, just exploring different techniques to help us live an aware, intentional, more grounded, and perhaps a little more well-being. And so today, I have another special guest here in the booth with me. Today we have on Ben. He's a grad student. He's in the psychology department and also a good friend that I'm glad to know. And so welcome to the show, Ben.
Hey, well, it's an honor and a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Likewise, appreciate you taking the time and coming on and our conversations. Pretty enlightening and insightful, pretty mindful. So I'd actually like to start off with a curveball, if you will, of what does mindfulness or really what is meditation? What does it mean to you?
So when I think about mindfulness or meditation, I think of it as sort of an art of living. I think of it as, you know, not just what you do on the cushion, but with every breath you take and sort of every step you take, a way of relating to those experiences from a place of really being connected. So, and, you know, personally, from a place of really being alive. How's that for vague?
That it's good. Little bit of depth to it. It's vague, but at the same time, I think a lot of key points came through. You mentioned it's more than just on the cushion, it's off the cushion. So how do we employ this art of living? Not necessarily a detailed write-up, how-to handbook, though you could, but how would you suggest, what do you mean by the differences of on and off the cushion and this art of living? Mm-hmm. I like that.
So when we're sitting on the cushion, you know, we're cultivating sort of these attitudes of curiosity, of openness, acceptance, and self-compassion while we practice. And we're basically practicing sort of riding the waves of our experience. Sort of letting our different emotions, our inner experiences flow through us from a place of noticing, from a place of careful observation and interest. And that's sort of the skill we're cultivating sitting on the cushion.
Right.
If we're just doing sort of a Vipassana style sort of meditation, mm-hmm. which is just sort of a noticing of what is happening in your body there in that moment. To bring that off the cushion, I feel, is to bring that same perspective, that same quality of being open to whatever arises and bringing curiosity to that. Taking attitude of sort of equanimity towards whether our experience is pleasant or unpleasant, recognizing that there is value in that, and living in a way that honors that, honors the value in both the enjoyable experiences, the pleasant experiences, as well as in the painful ones.
Nice. So this quality of equanimity, bringing that observing, equanimous, you mentioned a little bit of acceptance to be there with the enjoyable or pleasurable, as well as what gets tend to be labeled as suffering or unpleasant. And so how exactly, why does that work? Why does sitting here, and we throw around the term present moment and awareness and non-judgmental, but how does that work to when we're on a cushion or into our daily life? How does being with that? You said noticing. So is that just like a little bit of stepping back? We've talked about that a little bit on the show, that it's helpful to become aware of this present moment and to step back a little bit, because then we're not identified or swept away so much in the storyline. Whether it's true or untrue doesn't matter at this point, but just noticing those qualities. And so is it just kind of stepping back and open-handedly just holding it there, just being with it a little bit? Is that why it's helpful?
I think the idea of open-handedly holding it, that hits the nail on the head, at least in terms of my experience and experience of a lot of what sort of the clinical science would say about it, is that in not, you know, in rejecting a certain aspect of our experience, you know, say we're swept up in the pursuit of happiness or the pursuit of something that we enjoy, our ambitions.
Right.
Often these are stories that we tell ourselves in our minds. If I don't get this, then I can't be happy. Or if this happens to me, then I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And those sorts of things. When we're in that space in our head, then that's kind of what governs our experience. It starts to become really kind of microscoped in on that narrative, and we start to miss out on a whole lot else that's going on in our lives. So thinking about, say you're feeling really hungry and, you know, you're like, I got to get to the restaurant or the grocery store or what have you.
Right.
And, you know, your mind's going, how do I get there the fastest? What's the best way to get there? What's my action plan when I get there? How much is this going to cost? And then that whole narrative spins off to something else about money. When you're up in that, it's really hard to actually notice what's going on then, right then, at the time, then in the very moment. And we find with, you know, with mindfulness training, with the practice, as we notice there is so much that could potentially be going on in that moment. Mm. And so much that we could potentially connect with that is not necessarily that story, that isn't necessarily what our mind is telling us that it is.
Right. So it can still be there. It's not a denial, you said, or repressing or running away from it. It's noticing that that's there. But it's almost like the stepping back, the open-handed, it's just like, it seems to me, it's opening, it's widening a perspective. It's noticing what else is there. Sure, you're hungry, mm-hmm. or sure, you have a final, or you're stressed out or depressed or fill in the blank. But what else is there? And so this wider perspective seems to really allow us to then notice how much good maybe there is, or still going into the feeling of unpleasantness or the drive for hunger, whatever it is, again, fill in the blank. It seems like when we're so focused and narrow on that, we're maybe missing not only the good stuff, but maybe the things that are helpful to overcome some obstacles. Like, we've talked about this, and I've talked about this many times with pain.
Mm-hmm.
We just get onto the, I hate this, or how can you make it stop? And don't ever sit down and be with it, and don't mm-hmm. notice, like, well, where do I actually even feel this? Or even hunger. Well, that one may be in the stomach, but, you know, any anger, where do we actually feel this? And so not only are we missing a lot of everything else that's happening, we're actually missing the actual experience of what we think is quote-unquote wrong, or what we need to fix, or what we're trying to go out there to do to fix our hunger, to find that happiness. We're not even with that experience. We don't even sink into what it feels like or where in the body we feel that.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that you highlight that, because often, you know, mindfulness can be sold as a thing of, like, a feel-good thing.
Right.
And I think our society does a real good job of sort of sucking out all of the nobility associated with our suffering, like all of the possible lessons that we can learn, and all of the wisdom that is there in noticing what is this pain, what is this thing that I'm carrying with me, because often in there are things that are really important to us.
Mm.
And also are things that, you know, that may also be unnecessary. So there's pain, and then there's judgment on top of that.
Right.
So both in your pain, you probably find, you know, values, things that you love. This hurts because I love this. And there's an element of, if you run away from that experience, of not really honoring what you love, of what's really important to you there. And I think we miss out a lot on that when we spend, you know, we're in a world that says don't have any pain at all.
Right.
And cut this out of your experience because it shouldn't be there. And when we're told it shouldn't be there, then we judge it and add all of these layers on top of our pain. And by turning to that pain and noticing it for what it is, maybe it can be a little bit more bearable if we're not always judging it and trying to push it away.
Right. I mean, wow, we can open that, go in so many directions with that, but sticking with the pain, we can open that up and be with it to notice more of what's going on, what's really there. I've noticed in my own experience, there can be really excruciating pain. And again, we're not trying to say, oh, mindfulness will be here to fix that, or you won't have to feel that, or you do this right, or meditate, or, because then we're just using that technique to then fill in our neurosis of what we were doing anyways, trying to run away from it. But there can be looking into noticing why it's happening, the nobility of suffering, I like that, to just really feel it fully, go into it. With my experience, it's painful. It's pain. We label it pain for a reason, but when we sit with it a little bit, maybe it's just unpleasant, and then the mind is telling, how long will this last? Will I be like this forever? What is wrong with me? I mean, right there, we go into the doctor's office, we say, something's wrong with me. Instead of, well, it's pain that you're feeling, it's a sensation. So again, things need our attention, and things need actions to be done. Do not, this isn't a cure-all. It can be a way of noticing what is actually happening instead of something's wrong with me, when really I could sit with it, and the tension, the pain in my necks could be, I come to the actual sensations, come to where I feel it physically in the body, not where I'm thinking about it, and then notice that, wow, my shoulders are really tight. Wow, I'm holding tension. I'm hunched over.
Mm-hmm.
I can notice when I relax that, that tension perpetuates the pain. And so when I relax that, then there's less pain. But otherwise, we don't notice this. We go on hunched over or studying or whatever, creating more tension, which the constriction creates more pain, as far as I understand it. It's the way I feel it,
mm-hmm.
which then there's more pain and something I need to solve and mm-hmm. and fix and what's wrong, and just it spirals off from there. So would you say just being with it, feeling it fully, would be helpful?
I would say, you know, there's a lot of cases in which I'd say that's probably accurate. And then there's probably other cases in which, you know, at least in terms of working with people, it might be more skillful to change it. Things like, you know, the tension in my shoulders. Once
right,
I notice that,
be,
do I
just with
hang out with it? Yeah.
Pain. Right. I gotcha.
And I think the core message is sort of that pain is inevitable. Like mm-hmm. that's going to come along. And then the suffering part, the part of, I want to get rid of this. This is wrong. Even asking questions, how did this get here?
Right.
All the stories that we build up around it. That part is a little bit more optional. That part is a little bit more flexible. And we can sort of, when we look into our pain, tease those parts out a little bit.
Right. We can tease them out, and then just the act of awareness and being with it helps to kind of clear the mind by going within, by noticing what is actually here physically, being with it, instead of judging it or running away. You know, it's like you're kind of all shaken up. Like, I want to fix this. How do I... it kind of allows things to settle. I breathe, I relax those shoulders, I can be with it. But like you said, lots of times it's good reason to still take action. That seems to not happen unless we settle into it, unless we can be with it, unless we pay attention, we notice it.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not just be, oh, just be with it, it's not painful, it's just a sensation and don't change. Or maybe there's something really skillful we can do about it. But the key is, right now, we have to notice that, allow the mind to become clear, so then we can notice, do we need to, what's the skillful thing?
Mm-hmm.
Take action. Is this something that I can't change, and so I need to have some equanimity about it? Seems like being with it, this meditation, is cultivating to let that wisdom arise.
Exactly. I really like that point of making space for making some of these skillful choices, some of these taking actions that are based on something, based on wisdom rather than based on trying to get rid of the pain. I think what often happens is we end up in a place of pain, and then our choices end up becoming weighted by whether they'll reduce the pain or not.
Mm.
Instead of by whether this is the important, meaningful thing for me to do.
How much can I control right now? How much, what can I even do about it?
Mm-hmm.
What would perpetuate it, instead of, we tend to outrun and just pile. Like, there's the sayings, you know, just digging yourself in deeper. We kind of talk about that. It seems like that just runs away because we're not having that wisdom to see it a little more clearly. We're reacting. And we've talked about this before. How does that seem to just create those mental ruts? We can talk about it scientifically. It's habituation.
Mm-hmm.
Or we actually really are reinforcing not only those choices in our lives, we're actually reinforcing it because that's where we're paying our attention to. And so it's that narrowness we talked about in the beginning, as well as the brain actually does develop what we pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So mental ruts is kind of accurate. It seems like these actions or reactions, because we're not with it, we're not seeing things clearly, not seeing the skillfulness of being with it or changing. Seems like this automatic habitual reaction keeps those mental ruts
going.
Getting deeper, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, our minds, they carry with them some sort of programming, a programming that tends to focus on what is threatening and what is negative, because that's what seems to have helped us to survive.
Yeah, it got us till now, so mm-hmm. I mean, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that also leads to some fairly well-worn paths, well-worn circles that we can tell ourselves, because when the mind starts to lash back at itself as something that's the problem,
right,
that's where we can get stuck in those ruts. And mindfulness is kind of a way of expanding around that. Noticing that is, this is a habit pattern of my mind. This is something that I carry with me, and it's not the be all and end all of my reality. Mm. And it's neat because then mindfulness, it's not only a space to work with suffering and things like that, it's a space to move towards growth. And I think often, you know, in the clinical world, we lose that aspect of it. We focus mostly on the suffering.
Right.
So, some of this making space, and with that space, being able to choose directions related to growth, directions related to me living a really vital and fulfilling life.
Yeah, and I like that. Noticing that and creating that expansive space. Not only is that a feeling where you're feeling that expansive, you're feeling that space, but then you mentioned that is not our only definition. We've identified with whatever, you know, fill in the blank here, that expansiveness also goes to then realizing that's not all we are. Mm-hmm. Not just this person who's broken or needs, I need this because something's wrong, or I need that because I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. It seems to really allow that space both once the inside, you feel that expansiveness, you feel that relaxation, that more acceptance and ability really to just be with it. And just so we're not even at the stage of figuring out the right way or skillful way or how to even change it. We're not even to change yet. Mm-hmm. We're just offering that space. So you expand this being almost. It feels like you expand yourself. But then also that definition. You've identified yourself as this or as that, and you're expanding the mind around that too.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a lot of giving it space.
Yeah. But
how important is that compared to just, let's fix it, something's wrong?
Mm-hmm. The expansion around sort of a sense of a self story, in essence, a narrative that we've crafted about, you know, that I've crafted about my life, about who I am. Oh, I'm a grad student. I studied this. I live here. Mm-hmm. I like hiking, climbing, all of these things. Expanding around some of that and noticing, you know, in the here right now, that's a string that's sort of going on in your brain, but look at what else is here.
Yeah.
And not only that, noticing some of the, well, at least from a personal standpoint, some of the deep interconnectedness between me and, or whatever this quote-unquote I is, and the things around me. I think there's a place of when the I, that self story, is not all the be-all and end-all of your experience, when you're expansive, then some of the big waves that hit you, you know, they're not totally derailing the boat. Or right. Capsizing the boat, rather.
Derailing
it.
It made sense. Mm-hmm. I was going to go with that. Yeah.
And through that expansiveness, not only, you know, can we look into our stories and see the suffering that those are causing us, but we can also see, you know, see the broader picture of our experience, connect right. with what is around something that might be difficult for us, that there's so much more there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, what comes to mind is this can literally be experienced. This isn't just in theory. Last fall, my cousin passed away, mm-hmm. and we grew up together, mm-hmm. Just a year older than I am. And, you know, unexpected too. And I remember getting quite depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd try coming to school every day. And I remember just feeling so horrible one day. Even when I was trying to write, all that would really come out is, I am depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I was getting out of my car, arrived on campus. It took a minute before I started walking, and it was fall. So all these golden leaves just started raining down, and it was cold. So, and there was probably pain somewhere,
oh, man.
Tension. Mm-hmm. So it was all just really hitting, and just, I am depressed, gray clouds. But then I remember that hit me for some reason, either just reflecting on it or just writing out that I am depressed. I realized that that's all I was in that moment. That's all I thought I was.
Hmm.
I am depressed. I am that depression.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it hit me, and I looked up, and that's when I noticed the leaves slowly, golden orange leaves slowly trickling down. And I realized, you know what? I am depressed. There is depression here. I fully granted it permission. I was feeling depressed. I wasn't depressed. I'm not. That's not my definition. Mm-hmm. It was. I was looking at it that way, but that's just because I was perceiving it as that was my only identification as a self, was depression. And so I realized, wow, this can feel pretty terrible, and I am feeling that, but that's what it is. It's a feeling. This is somebody I love incredibly. But as those leaves just hit right in front of me, I realized Walt Whitman's words actually came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Where he talks about, I am large. I contain multitudes. At that moment, that popped into my mind. And I realized, wow, I can completely feel this depression. I can completely, because that's a feeling. I can, mm-hmm. carry that inside. I can honor that feeling. I can honor my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
We do feel bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's what is really happening at that moment. But also, that's not all I am. And I just felt this expansion both within me and the mind, not identifying as my soul identity, was just that word, that description. And noticing, wow, I contain multitudes. I can also notice these leaves. I can also notice, he may not have been perfect. I am not perfect, that's for sure. But how many amazing things did this person do? How many people's, mm-hmm. lives did he touch? How many lives can I touch?
Mm-hmm.
What else is there, as I walked to class? And just noticed how many wonderful things this being carried with him and who he was. And then that's when I realized I can carry all that, mm-hmm. and more, because that expansiveness doesn't have to stop at just a sentence or two of a definition of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty neat that you brought that up, because that's what just came up for me.
That's so powerful.
Not only feeling that internal expansion, expansiveness, and kind of releasing that. Mm-hmm. I was gripping, like, why, you know, kind of thing. And then why am I feeling this, and why is, you know, all that. And just really holding it open in my hands and looking at it and noticing there's so much more, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more. And so it was a real expansion of identity in the mind and also physically. So it was pretty neat.
Yeah, wow, what a powerful experience. That's, you know, as you're just talking about it, I'm kind of picturing it in my head, and whoa. I'm noticing kind of like, there's, yeah, that's feeling my kind of heart expanding and feeling a lot of compassion right now. And
see, and that's exactly what it did. As I walked mm-hmm. to class, I could see the people instead of what might have been when you're closed down, maybe running into people and why are they in my way, or this, you know, that could have been a path. But now it was just like, oh, wow. That's an amazing person right there who has a real life, who's mm-hmm. is a real human being that's going through things. I hope, may they be well.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just, there's a lot. That's what it did. It gave me a lot more options.
That's awesome.
Instead of closed off, where that's all that could be happening right now. Mm-hmm. That's all the thoughts were. When will this end? Or, I mean, it wasn't even that far. I didn't give myself that much room to think about when would this feeling end. It was just completely contained.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just seemed to open up and give some options. So this isn't just in theory. I mean, we can actually cultivate this on the cushion. And every day, that was getting out of my car. That mm-hmm. was feeling a leaf touch the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And so I think there really is something to that, as you mentioned, this wider perspective and expanding that notion, that sense of self.
Yeah, I think some of the most powerful moments in my experience have been finding that connection and finding that sense of, oh, wow, like, coming with that, there's sort of a wonderment with just being able to experience that, being able to be alive and have this world that we can connect to. Like sometimes, you know, one of my de-stress things is to walk around campus and notice that I'm supported. Notice mm-hmm. that I'm standing on this earth. That I'm being upheld by that. I'm being upheld by my feet, my ankles, my shins, my knees, all of these things working in concert just to, you know, take me where my mind kind of wanders. And often it is wandering, but to connect with that and then to look around and notice the trees, to notice as the trees breathe out, I breathe in what they've just produced,
right.
And that we're sharing that breath. And just to notice just various things like that, that kind of send this message of, you're not alone.
Mm.
And you're not alone in your suffering. There's a whole world around you here right now that's supporting you. However painful your experience might be in this moment, you're not separate. And I think our culture pushes us so much in the direction of separation.
Right.
That mindfulness as a tool for connectedness or as a means to really see how connected we are could be incredibly powerful.
Yeah. I often feel when I'm aware, when I'm being mindful and noticing that, just like you said, I connect a lot with the earth because, not just the earth, as you'll see, I often feel like the trees are my lungs. The mm-hmm. sun and sky are my eyes. Wouldn't see, even having eyes, wouldn't matter mm-hmm. without being able to see everything lit up. You know, a bird call, and you are literally hearing that. That is your sounds that are passing through you. Mm-hmm. And so you're really breathing life, breathing your experience. It feels like a little more expansive, and you're just really flowing with life instead of up against it. You're feeling so supported. So many people probably helped you get into college. I know that's my case.
Me too.
I know without a doubt there's a dozen I can name off right now to just literally, logistically wouldn't be here. And the same thing with their open hearts and encouragement, another dozen to get me here, to support me while I am here. And I don't... don't just mean like financially or something being supported, but just are literally there for you, mm-hmm. And connected with you, giving you that inspiration. We wouldn't learn this without our teachers, professors.
Mm-hmm.
Not only would we not be breathing and have the sky if it wasn't there, but literally we are really supported by this earth and others. It's a very good point. And it seems like that suffering may still be there and may still, and definitely has that value,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't really have to color our perception completely. We don't have to put on the shades and just block out everything else that we just mentioned, that connection and being with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important, I think, you bringing that up, that our joys and sorrows are not ours alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not separated from everyone else's. And you may actually be thinking, well, yeah, it is. I would be perfectly happy with this. But if it's causing suffering, it's causing other people, no one's going to stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's not separate. You can, it seems like it won't be long lasting if we're trying to find happiness in the midst of, while it's causing harm,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. It just doesn't seem to mix, that it's not separate.
Because mm-hmm.
you're going to rely on those other things. You're going to rely on the basics, food. You're going to need to rely on safety and security, that if yours comes from the exclusion of another's, it's just not going to work long term.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like that breeding the separateness is not a long term solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be long term anyways if we don't have an earth or
a planet
or be alive.
Live off of, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you make a really good point there, and it's often, you know, our action tendency when we're hurting is to become separate, to become, I'm wounded and, you know,
closed off.
This is not, yeah, I don't want to connect with other people about this. And that feeds right into the play of me being a separate being that is hurting, that has to get something to fix the what's hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle starts again and again, the avoiding pain, seeking pleasure, seeking something to fix what's wrong, quote unquote, wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're separate and mm-hmm. therefore not sufficient because you're missing this and there's that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Is that
exactly? And then when really, you know, doing something like the opposite, not necessarily reaching directly out to someone saying I'm suffering, can you help me, or anything like that, but appreciating that we are connected can be such a powerful kind of action tendency to counter
mm-hmm.
counter the tendency to pull in and to isolate ourselves.
So not only is meditation or any kind of practice that is whatever works for you out there, that helps you to be in touch there, that allows these things to rise. Not only is that connecting to yourself and what's really going on and how to be aware of that, but also that is the very thing that is connecting and linking us to others. So it's not a self practice then, actually.
Mm-hmm.
People literally are meditating for world peace then, because mm-hmm. it is involving others and that connection. And allowing that to be there, just as you explained.
It's so cool that you point that out. And that's such a paradox of some of the practice. It seems like such a solitary thing to cultivate, you know, sitting on the cushion alone in silence.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, in looking deeply, we're actually looking all around us. So.
Yeah, weren't you mentioning how there... Yeah, I believe it was you when we were talking earlier, that solitary practice, the on the cushion, whatever our practice is a learning ground, that is the schooling that is needed, that gives you that space to begin with,
mm-hmm.
that then opens up and unfolds into what we're talking about now and others. So that is still very helpful to learn those skills and tools,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't stop there. It's not just a solitary, which, as you've explained, perfectly highlights what you said in the beginning, practice off the cushion as well.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we sit there and we cultivate this sort of alternate pattern of mental behaviors, if you will, and with the hopes that it'll start to show up in our day and start to make a difference in our lives.
Which makes a lot of sense, because we don't go to school and then stop learning because we're not in school that day.
Exactly.
Or because we're done. You're constantly learning and constantly using what you learn throughout the rest of your day when you're not in class or in school or at work or on the job, whatever training you're going through. It doesn't just end. Mm-hmm. And so likewise, with this meditation, cultivating the mind, feeling this expansion does not just end there, and it does percolate into the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Just like learning. We don't not learn or don't put our learning to use just because we're not being tested. it spills out.
It overflows, yeah.
It becomes part of what's included within. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it overflows. It's kind of like investing. It's investing in yourself to take that time, that grounding, that centeredness, but is really not just yourself, because as we said, you're connected with others and it spills out.
Mm-hmm.
So that investment in the mind, in a healthy mind, to be here, to pay attention to what's happening, is really allowing that to be with others. I mentioned last week that when you are cultivating these mind states and you're more open, compassionate, and generous, other people will definitely directly benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not happy, open, and generous, you're not going to be out there helping people typically.
Mm-hmm.
It's the folks that kind of have settled into this and are cultivating those traits, those mind states, turning them into traits.
Yeah.
Is what's really impacting others in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. And being connected with others, you know, then those things become of value. Generosity becomes of value because you can feel and you can sense that, wow, I'm not only, you know, my generosity is not just me giving a chunk of whatever I think myself is to this other person, but I'm benefiting the interconnection between us.
And deep enough, you kind of lose that I am benefiting that person, because you feel that symbiotic relationship, that it's great.
Mm-hmm. Just dissolves kind of the sense of the solidified I that we carry around with us.
And therefore, also the separate, only my problem.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of dissolves that too. It's still there. We're still looking at it. We still see it. But it's not all we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It may be. But we can see what else is also within the landscape at the same time. It's kind of like covering your hand over your eyes. When it's right up on your face, that's all you see.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have perspective, a wider view, and we put our hand where it belongs at the end of our arm, we still see it. We're not denying that my hand, my problem is not there. But what else is there? Mm-hmm. The entire world, because now my eyes aren't blocked.
Exactly. It's like, you know, if you're sitting in front of a computer and there's a whole room around you, are you like, is your face right up next to the screen, or are you back like, and can you see that room around you?
Well, and even not even that big, it's maybe we're writing an email. Are we in that, or are we stepping back realizing, wow, this may not be a very helpful email to send?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
We can just go one email, one phone call, one conversation at a time. You can just notice, wow, let me step back and read this and see if this is going to actually build this relationship or create this cycle, keep the cycle going.
Mm-hmm.
It can either be grist for the mill to cultivate the mind, the suffering to learn and grow. It can be grist for the mill, a catalyst to really appreciate that nobility you said of our suffering, and almost put it to use to then get that wider perspective, that incorporate it, that feeling it, honoring it, but also noticing what else is there. This whole catalyst that it can put you into, but it can also be the grist for the perpetual suffering in our minds and relationships with others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, again, what it all comes down to is, where are we going to put our awareness on our thoughtful actions, responses, or mindless habitual reactions.
Mm-hmm. And wherever we're putting our mind, constantly asking ourselves, what else, what else, what else is here? I found that to be extremely helpful in a lot of ways. Nice. Even when I think I'm going down the right path, it's like, that's my story still.
Right. Well, I just want to thank you once again. Very, very helpful, amazing conversation and having you on. And so I just appreciate it and thank you once again.
Likewise, I so appreciate it. Thank you very much, Jake.
And so, folks, as you've been listening, we can put some of these techniques and practices, try them out in our daily life or right now. Again, it can lead to a whole practice in and of itself on your own. It can support any sort of development, personal growth you have, whether this supports another practice or just a simple skill or tool to help you out. But allow yourself to just notice what's going on right now. What's happening around you. Maybe notice what you're seeing. If your eyes are open. Become aware of what you're hearing right now. Not really thinking about it or labeling, but just noticing, hearing. Just notice what's happening within you. Feeling the sensations in your chair or walking. Maybe the sensations of the breath. Or as you're typing or writing. Just what's going on right now. Just feeling it, noticing it. Not analyzing, not judging. Just release any tension you're holding on an exhale. Letting go right now in this moment. Everything might be okay for right now. And just notice what's coming up, what's happening for you within. Are you worried, distracted, agitated, content, just feeling the breath, feeling your aliveness, noticing what it's like to breathe, to be alive? Sounds simple and silly to bring our awareness to what it feels like to breathe or to be alive, but do we slow down enough to really know what it feels like? How do you know you're alive? Again, not analyzing or thinking about it, but just what is the felt quality? What do you feel within? And whether it's pleasurable or unpleasant, maybe you're a little restless or happy, either way, just see if you can allow that to be there. And when the time comes, if there's something you can do about it, then by all means, go about the things we can do. But what is it like to just be with what's coming up? To be a little anxious about a final, or worried about a meeting with the boss, or feeling some unpleasant sensations, or what we typically label as pain. So what would it be like to be with that for a moment? And it doesn't even have to be condoning or even accepting at this point. Just notice that anxiety, that tension. Notice that joy. feeling what it feels like to be inhabiting this body, to feel those feelings and emotions, sensations coming up. And just offer that space. You may not be able to deal with it right now or accept it. You may not know how to go about changing it. It's okay, just offer some space that you can just be who you are right now. I'm not saying you have to be happy and accept yourself the rest of your life, but just right now, what it would be like. To just feel, to notice, to be with what's happening within. And offer yourself space as much as you need. Becoming aware of what's there. Not grabbing onto it. Not pushing it away. Kind of being like the wind. It comes and goes. The wind carries beautiful fragrances. It carries ugly, nasty, stinky fragrances. But the wind itself is unaffected. It does not care, does not judge. Whether it's the smell of flowers or garbage. In this moment, it just is. We can just notice what it feels like to be with our experience. Offering space. Feeling it as the wind coming and going. And just notice if anything has changed for you. That's not a goal right now. Nothing may have happened, that's fine. But maybe there's a sense of openness, relaxation, giving that space and being with it. Breathing through whatever your experience is. Breathing through studying or taking an exam. Breathing and coming back to the body in a difficult conversation. Even physically, a physical activity, yoga, or whatever you may be doing or go to do. You can just breathe through that, holding that space. And if we expand our being, I'm not trying to sound mystical or esoteric, but when we hold on and identify with these narrow views, it's kind of like salt in a cup of water. That insult, that feeling, whatever we're trying to push away, when we're just holding on to that and only identified with that, then it's like salt in a cup of water. Of course it's going to be salty. But if we allow ourselves a little bit of space, a little openness, again, not condoning or accepting, just granting our awareness to what is happening, we can expand our being a little bit, size of a bucket or bathtub. The salt's not going to overcome it too much. We can notice what else is going good for us, what else is happening in our lives. It's not just things we think are problems. It's not just our limitations. Those are there. And you're not in it alone. But what else is there? If we step back, if we hold those limitations and quote-unquote problems there kindly, with the curiosity, what else do we notice as we expand our awareness to the size of a lake or pond? Those issues or insults or negative thoughts or whatever we're labeling as unpleasant can still be there just like salt, but in lake, when we've expanded our awareness, our identity, it doesn't blow us around as much. And when we come to a more of a settled, open, a little clearer space, that's when we can then start planning or analyzing the situation. Once our mind is calmed, once we're with what's happening and actually settled into it, when the mind's a little more clear, that's when we're more effective to see if there's change that needs to be, an action needs to be taken, or just being with something, or just noticing. And you can use this practice formally. It's a form of sitting meditation, or just throughout your day, just coming back to the body, noticing where you feel this, and offering it space. Not with the secret hopes of trying to change it, I'll offer you space. I do that a lot with pain. Like, okay, I've accepted you, pain. Now go away. I open the door to my heart to you. Now please go. I've accepted you. No, but just really being with it for a moment, for as long as you can. Not trying to fix or change everything. To just notice if we can be with what comes up. And what would that be like? We can notice any options or different directions coming up in the mind, or how we're relating to life, or responses with our relationships. I'm just noticing that and being with it, seeing what that would be like. If we're not trying this and we're still running into obstacles, maybe what we're doing isn't working and it's worth giving it a shot. So those are some practices. We can always come back to the body, to what is happening right now, and feel our connection with others, our joys and sorrows, is what really connects us with others. Our suffering may be impersonal and part of the human condition, what connects us with others. May also be something that's very helpful in our, on our path, to help us be there, empathize with others. Just wanted to remind you once again, folks, you're listening to Aggie Radio. This is Mindfulness on Air. And there's also another option. If you wanted to explore this a little bit this summer, there's that retreat I've mentioned. Retreat dedicated to putting some of these interesting things into practice. To exploring them just with an open mind, a curiosity. And so this summer, there's a retreat with two great teachers, very experienced, so you can not only practice in a place that's conducive to cultivating the mind, to opening the heart or expanding our being in awareness, but also getting that guidance from very experienced teachers, Susie Harrington and Alexis Santos. It's going to be two different options. There's a 3-day retreat. It's July 31st to August 2nd. Or a 6-day, July 31st to August 5th. The 3-day is over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's July 31st to August 2nd, or the option of staying on till August 5th. Again, that's just an option. You definitely don't have to, but if you're interested, that would be a great way to support and develop an existing practice. And also, if you're a beginner and just wanting to learn a great opportunity for that too. There's no experience necessary. That's in the Paradise Camp in Paradise, just south of Logan. It's a beautiful area with an option to camp in a tent or in lodging. And so just a wonderful option there. You can inquire to us, email usumeditationclub@gmail.com. Once again, that's usumeditationclub@gmail.com. Or you can register at desertdharma.org. DeserdharmaOrg. That's Susie Harrington's site. You can check that out, any other information if you'd like to. It's just an option for you. And, well, I hope you folks have a good rest of your day. Stay safe and be mindful. Enjoy your weekend.